Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a really good show for you today. In this half hour, we're going to do a rebroadcast of Rabbi Yitzhak Wagner, who was the first rabbi ordained in, born German rabbi who was ordained in Germany since the Holocaust. Very interesting. You're going to really like that one. The portion of the week, we're ending the book of Exodus. It seems like we just started the book of Exodus, but yep, we're ending the book of Exodus with Vayakhel Pekudei, which is to be found in chapter 36 and following till the end of the book of Exodus. We have a wonderful Hasidic story at the end. Terrific music, of course, as you would expect, Jewish music of a varied and eclectic sort. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. White House Special Envoy Jason Greenblatt met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for 3 hours in Tel Aviv, actually in Jerusalem. They discussed the future of the peace process, economic development in the Palestinian Authority, and the future of construction in the Jewish communities of Judea and Samaria. It's a name you're going to want to keep in mind, Jason Greenblatt. Israel's Air Force destroyed 2 Hamas structures in Gaza following a rocket attack firing from Gaza that landed in a field. The IAF also bombed positions in Syria that were firing into northern Israel. The first woman to join Hamas, Ahmad Aref Ahmad Al-Tamanini, is now on the FBI's most wanted list for her part in the 2001 suicide bombing of the Sbarro restaurant in Jerusalem. Tamimi was sentenced to 16 terms of life in prison, but was released as part of the Gilad Shalit deal in 2011. 16 people were killed in that attack, including 2 Americans. Why is she walking around? Anyway, in local news, of course, we're keeping a running tab. 10 more JCCs received bomb threats this week, bringing the total to 160 for the year. Juan Thompson from St. Louis was charged with making 8 threats, but he appears to be a copycat since he's in jail and they're still going on. In related news, the website for Detroit's Walk for Israel was hacked and peppered with hate-filled and anti-Semitic expressions. The messages appeared on the site's homepage for about 3 hours. West Bloomfield police and the FBI are investigating. Now in the sport, Israel's run in the World Baseball Classic ended with losses to the Netherlands and Japan in the second round. Israel surprised everyone as it won the first round with 4 straight victories, including one over powerhouse Cuba. We'll see you in 2021, boys. And finally, more than 30,000 people, including 3,500 runners from 70 countries, ran in the 7th International Jerusalem Marathon on Friday. For the second year in a row, the winner was Shadrach Kipkosegi of Kenya, of course. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Why go anywhere else when you go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Hey, Shul Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We welcome Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner to the show. This is quite a distinction that you're 35 years old. It says you're right here, so I don't have to ask you how old you are.
Yeah.
And that you're the first person, the Holocaust was 70 years ago, that there's nobody that was born within the 35 years before you that became a rabbi. What do you think led to this? That how is it that you were the first German-born person to become a rabbi, Rabbi Wagner?
It's a very, very interesting and very, very difficult question to answer. I have absolutely no idea how it happened. most of the Jews in Germany today, they are from former Soviet Russia. So because what happened in Russia all those centuries with the communists, so most of the Jews who came to Germany after the war, after 1989, were not religious Jews. I guess that's one of the reasons. So my history is a different history, and so most of the Jews here are not that religious because they are from Russia, and I had like a different background. So perhaps I went to Israel when I was 18. In Germany you have to do civil service or army. Today it changed, but when I was 18 it was like this, and I chose the option to do civil service, but not in Germany, but to do it in Israel.
And they let you do that.
The government to pay. Yeah, what?
And they let you do that in America? That would be called draft dodging.
No, but us, it was an option to do the civil service abroad. And so I got the government to pay for me doing civil service in Israel. So I could learn in the yeshiva half-time. And the other half of the day, I was working with the mental disabled Orthodox Jews. And somehow that's how it started.
Very interesting. So, but do you know anything about Germany, like around, there were a lot of Jews that actually flooded into Germany after World War II. They're in the DP camps and Pucking. And a lot of them, I suppose, didn't stick around in Germany, but went elsewhere. They went to France, they went to the United States, to Canada, to South America, to Israel.
Yeah.
So not many of them. So you're saying the influx of Jews into Germany, you said, really started in 1989 with the Glasnost and Perestroika.
Yes.
That's okay. Correct. So you're saying most German Jews would be then Russian expats. You're saying?
Let's see, my community in Krefeld, which is a community about 1,000 members we have, I'm pretty sure we have up to 98-99% Jews from former Soviet Russia. The first language in the community is Russian.
Mm-hmm. And how do you handle that? How has your Russian become?
My Russian is quite хорошо. This means it's quite okay in the moment. It's not enough to give a real good shiur in philosophy, but it's enough that they cannot sell me. So my wife is from Ukraine, so she speaks Russian, and I hear a lot of Russian at home. And the parents of my wife, of course, my in-laws. Yeah, I always make mistakes with in-laws and inmates, so I see.
Better in-laws and outlaws is another thing. Yes, okay.
Yeah, right. So my in-laws, they speak also Russian, so I'm very much under Russian influence. And when I give a shiur, so they translate it to Russian. Within the year, so I started to understand and to speak a little bit, so that's how I can handle it.
Okay. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Yitzchak Mendel Wagner. What's it like being Jewish in post-Nazi Germany? You should give the question.
It's special because the people here are not used to religious-looking Jewish people. So everywhere I go with the kippah, so it's not talk about anti-Semitism. It's just like the people that they don't know really what it is. So they, I mean, somehow perhaps they know what it is, but they cannot believe the eyes. They see something actual like this walking on the street. Let me tell you, when we had first time coming a Chazan for the high holidays, he schlepped with him his brother and friends of his brother. So we were like 10 Orthodox looking, very Orthodox looking, you know, with big hats and kapotes, walking on the street to do tashlich on Rosh Hashanah. So there you could, this was people didn't see something like this in our city since the times of Napoleon. So you could see that everywhere we walked, people looked, so, you know, everybody looked at us, and it was a rainy day, and there was a car driving a little bit too fast, and in a curve, I saw that he was looking at us, and he lost control over the car, and he jumped into the tree. So, Baruch Hashem, nothing happened to him, but the car was finished. So, when you walk around like an Orthodox Jew in Germany, so this could happen to you. The people are not used to see something like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been watching German culture since I was in probably middle school, junior high school, and in my mind, the average German, and of course I know this is stereotyping, there's a certain xenophobia, fear of foreigners, or anything which is not German in Germany. Is that true? And do you see that?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I cannot say this about everyone, but in general, yes, it belongs where you go. If you go to a big city like Berlin, if you go to a city like Cologne, if you go to a city like Düsseldorf, where there are many students from all over the world, so that might be different. But if you go to Bavaria and you go to one of these little Städtlach over there, so there the people are very stick together with each other, and also in such places, especially in the east, also in the cities there it's totally different, and there you have also much more racism, much more problems with anti-Semitism. It's much more in the east today than it's in the west.
Mm-hmm. Is that because
it's more cultural, then it's not like this.
Is that traditionally Germany is actually divided north and south because of the different religions?
Yes.
There the east and west was something which is more political. Would you say that the rise of, or the intensity of anti-Semitism in the east is because of the Russian influence after so many decades of being under Russian control?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I mean, it's a very hard question. It could be that so after so many years being under the Russians, that somehow they had developed a special fascism idea because the communists were so much against it. Could be that it's like this. But one thing is for sure, there are places in eastern Germany, little towns, where there's no-go areas for Jews. So if I would walk there with the kippah, it would be mamish dangerous to walk there.
Really?
Yeah.
And the federal government tolerates such practices? Like today in America...
No. They don't tolerate it, and they try to do something against it. But sometimes in the East, yes, such places where you cannot really do anything big against it. It's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose you in Western Germany look at East Germany kind of the same way that we look at like backwards Appalachia, just a bunch of hillbillies and hicks and backward people then.
Yeah. I mean, now the East is getting it's very nice, and many parts of the East, they look more nicer than in the West because they made everything new. But there's a special mentality in smaller cities in the East where we also see that the Nazi parties, like the neo-Nazi parties, which skinheads like to vote for, so they are much, much stronger in the East than it's in the West.
Okay, so now... There's also, after World War II and all of the, when atrocities became public knowledge, there became a certain apologeticism officially maintained by the German government. And we see that remuneration that was given to Israel in the forms of yearly funds, and every taxi cab in Israel is a German-made car that was given to them. How does the average German in the street look at this, and have you ever come across this like collective guilt, you might say?
Yes, a little. There was a television show a year ago, and they asked some people on the street with the camera what they're thinking about the Holocaust. And it was very scary to see how many people answered that it was very, very, you know, bad what happened, but it's a long time ago. I didn't do it. My parents didn't do it. My grandparents, this was their generation. I think it's already time, you know, to get over it, not to have you know, this Yom HaShoah and 9th of November, perhaps it's a little bit too much. And wherever we go, you know, it's like a stigma on our head that people see the Germans and they always, you know, they bring it in one word, you know, with Auschwitz and Dachau. And so there are people on the street who think like this. Yes, that's unfortunately true. But, yeah, I mean, that's the way it is.
I mean, can you blame them? I mean, this is something they said. I wasn't born. I didn't have any part of this. It's not anything I would do. It was my grandparents, my great uncle.
Yes,
it's not.
That's correct. But still, if something like this happened, then the children and the grandchildren and all the generations afterwards have a special duty to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. And that's very important in Germany. And it's very important for the German government because Holocaust education is something very, 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 very important in the German school system. They start learning about the Holocaust in kindergarten. That's as early as they start speaking about Anne Frank. The schools are going to Auschwitz. They put a lot of pressure in learning about what happened in Germany. But still, you have like people who are not educated or stupid people, and they think as they do. But you have them all over. I'm sure in the States we have also some people who you know, claim the Holocaust never happened, and it's enough, you know, and always the Jews. So this is something you find everywhere, and in Germany as well. Just okay. It's special to find it.
Okay, in case if you're just joining us again, our guest today is Rabbi Yitzhak Mendel Wagner. What about the proliferation of Judaism in Germany? I think the last statistic I saw is that it was about 30,000 Jews living in Germany. Is that?
No, it's more. It's much more. It's over 100,000 Jews.
100,000 Jews.
It's over 100,000 Jews, and it's just 10,000 Israelis living in Berlin. Just 10,000 Israelis living in Berlin.
10,000, okay. And out of a population, what's the population of Germany?
I have no idea, to be honest. I have no idea. 90 million, like this?
90 million. I was going to say 100 million. Okay. So 100,000 out of 90 million. There's not a whole lot of Jews living in Germany. If you're talking about...
It's not that much, but we never know how it could change. You know, if you take a look at the Jewish population, let's say 1980, and 1988, and then 1992, so you see already it's a big difference. So if you see what's going on today in Europe and the other countries like France and in Budapest, Ungarn, then you never know. It could be that, you know, God forbid, you know, that if it's getting worse there, Jews are starting. We get calls from Jews in other countries to ask if we can help them to come to Germany because they don't want to stay in France. They don't want to go for whatever reason to Israel. So they're asking if there's a possibility the community could help them to come to Germany.
Interesting. Who would have thought?
Very interesting, yeah.
Who would have thought? Now, I know in France, for example, and less so in Italy, and I think it's also true in like Belgium and Holland, synagogues don't have signs in front of them. And France, for example, you have to be on, and in Italy, I know this true to be true, at Rome for sure, you have to be on a list in order to get past the guards to come in for services on Saturday morning. Is that true in Germany also? Are the synagogues hidden?
Yes. Security is very, very tough. It's very, very high. And people coming from America, when they come to visit our community, they are shocked that sometimes they don't even get in because on Shabbat they don't have a passport, for example. So it's strong security. Let's say our community in Krefeld, very interesting, is the most secure building in all Germany. It's more secure from the technique than the American embassy in Berlin because we don't have a wall around the community, so it's just part of the street. And that's why they put a couple of million euros in just having a front, you know, the front of the community, made it specially bomb blast secure. And that's the reality we have. We have the police always before the community building. Everybody who wants to go into the community has to go, like by the airport, through a metal detector, and he has to show his passport. And, that's reality today.
Uh-huh. And people are just used to that. People living there are just used to it. This is part of the... Part of what you have to do, just like getting on an airplane here in America, you have to take your shoes off. So going to the synagogue to go pray to God, you have to go through the security.
Yes, our children are used to this. Just about a year and a half ago, My daughter's going to the went to the kindergarten in the in Düsseldorf. This is like 30 minutes. It's the next bigger city. They have a kindergarten and there's also security. But one day we brought her there and we see that the police is standing there with machine guns and bulletproof clothing. So they had to secure the children for like 3 or 4 weeks because the secret service of Germany, they had information that some Germans went to Syria to fight and they came back to our area. So they were very, very afraid that they're now very motivated to do something, and that's why the security can even get higher than its average.
Uh-huh. So you have your orange is probably our red, and your red is probably way off our charts even. So this is but you sleep good at night, I suppose.
No, we sleep good at night. But today I went to a funeral, for example, and somebody passed away from the community. He wasn't active. Many people, about 500 people attended the funeral, so there had to be the police by the funeral. So they had to check every car who went into the cemetery, and you had to show your passport. So this is even by a funeral. If many Jews get together, the police always tries, you know, to show presence, and they know why.
Okay, that's a good thing, though. But okay, so let's talk about Judaism. You mentioned education in your city. Krefeld is not a big city, from what I understand.
I always say it's like bigger than Haifa. This always sounds good because Haifa is also not that big.
Haifa is the third largest city, and it's the fourth largest city in Israel. So I mean, you know, so
right. So we have about 300,000, I guess, 300,000 people living in Krefeld.
Okay, that's actually bigger than the biggest city in Israel. Tel Aviv only, I think, has just 300,000. But, okay, and what about kosher foods, education, Jewish education, other things that Jews are interested in? What's available in Germany?
Kosher food is still a problem, but we have Germany is close to Belgium, and at least where we live in West Germany, and we are an hour and a half from Antwerp. And Antwerp in Belgium is like one of the Torah centers in Europe. And it has a lot of Jewish infrastructure, many kosher shops. So we, in our community, every month, once, twice, we are driving to Antwerp and we are buying all what we need, like books and kosher food. And we buy it from there. There are also now websites from Belgium selling the kosher food online. So then they ship it to you like next day. We have very few kosher products in the supermarket. It's not like in America, it's a dream. It's like, I guess, perhaps 80%, I have the feeling, it's like automatically kosher in America. We are very, very far from that. Education, we have in Krefeld, we just have like Sunday school, but we have the next bigger community, as I said, is Düsseldorf, 30 minutes away, and we send our children there. They have a kindergarten and they have an elementary school. The big problem is after elementary school, because as religious parents, we want to send our children like to yeshiva or to other places. And we don't have those in the area. There's just one gymnasium, it's called, one high school.
I think, in English. High school, yes.
It's in Berlin, which is like 6 hours away. And many rabbis have to send the children to Antwerp to learn, which is a very big headache because, you know, you cannot drive your children every day an hour and a half to school. So the same family is there and just come back for Shabbat. And this is one of the things we really have to change in Germany. And we're working on this very, very hard to open a Jewish religious school in this part where we are living. That's the new project.
Mm-hmm. Are things easier in Berlin? Berlin is a big city. I know there is a yeshiva in Berlin. I think there's even two yeshivas in Berlin. Is it easier to be Jewish in Berlin?
It's easier. It's much easier to be Jewish in Berlin. The only advantage we have to Berlin is that we are much more close to Antwerp. So very often, if Berlin is doing something, they have to bring the food and the infrastructure from Antwerp, and for them it's very, very far. And for us, it's just, you know, over the border.
Uh-huh. Okay, indeed. That's going to wrap us up for us. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got some new music for you today. This is Eighth Day. We've had them on before zillions of times already. The song is called Torah is the Best Dischaura. Torah is the best merchandise. Let's listen.
When the world had no galaxy, before the sun set the long night free, before the archers shot their miss, before the angels found their bliss, he looked inside, see what would be. Only then came you and me. Apaim shana kadma toira, kadma toira liyelam. Apaim shana kadma toira, kadma toira liyelam. Toira, the best es chayira. Toira, is better for nigel. From the start you touch the end, and in the end you start again. His holy words keep us safe and sound. It was the first thing that came around. He looked inside, see what would be. Then came you and me. Alpine shone up, cut my toy, cut my toy, the yellow. Alpine shone up, cut my toy, cut my toy, the yellow. Toy, the best as horrido. Toy, it's better for me, get better, better. Toy, the best as horrido. Toy, is that the funny bear? Toiro, the best as Toiro. Toiro, is that the funny bear?
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West Nine Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Fidman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I am going to be speaking as part of Limud, Michigan, which Michigan learns is what that means. That's today. I'm speaking, it's going on now. It started at 10 o'clock this morning. I mean, continuing, I think, till 5, maybe even past 5. And that's at the Wayne State University Campus Student Union Building. I'm going to be speaking at 2:30. About why Jews believe in creationism. So if you're in the neighborhood, stop by. If you're not in the neighborhood, get in the neighborhood and stop by. I'm not sure exactly how the charges are arranged. You have to register, and they give you this nice little badge and a tote bag filled with stuff. And that's going to be today. What else is today? Well, we got Men DJ coming up for you right now, a nuisance singing sensation. And this is Hamelech HaKadosh, the Holy King.
Atorato Kodesh, Shimcha Kodesh, Atorato Kodesh, Shimcha Kodesh, Atorato Kodesh, Shimcha Kodesh, Atorato Kodesh, Shimcha Kodesh, Uki, Doishi, Uki, Deishim, Dechel, Yemia, Halelu, Chosela, Uki, Doishi, Uki, Deishim, Bechon, Yemia, Halelu, Chosela,
someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Schulzman here. We're having more fun than we should be, but that's okay. We have up next, well, it says 30 days before the holiday you should start thinking about the holiday, learning about the holiday, in this case, singing about the holiday. So Passover's coming up. First Seder is April 10th is when Passover begins and continues on for an 8 days afterwards, a full 8 days until like the 19th. So we got a little Passover music for you. This is Shulam Lemmer, who is also pretty new on the scene. I like his voice. He's got a very good voice. He's going to go far. And he's singing a mashup of Dayenu and Ki Lo Na'at, two songs from the Passover Haggadah. Let's listen. Dayenu, 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 why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Why go anywhere else when you go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of Passover products in Michigan. One Stop Kosher carries thousands of kosher for Passover items, and over 100 Passover items are on sale now. They even have kosher for Passover pizza, hamburger buns, and cake. One Stop Kosher has the largest selection of kosher for Passover wines as well. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Hey, Schultzman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Vayakhel Pekudei. It is a double portion to facilitate that various things happen in the end, middle and end of the year. The two combined portions are therefore the longest Torah reading of the year. It's 176 verses, which just so happens to also be the longest chapter in Tillim and Psalms 119 is 176 verses. It's also the same length as the Book of Esther, which we read not too long ago, 176 verses. And it happens to be the length of the longest tractate in Talmud, Baba Basra, which people who are doing a page a day are studying right now, 176 folio, which means double-sided pages. I am not going to talk about the number 176. What I am going to talk about is what the portion and the significance to Passover. Since we are in the weeks of Passover coming up, so therefore it is to be understood that the portion of Vayakhel Pekudei must have something to do with the preparation for Passover. There are two themes in Vayakhel Pekudei, since one is portion of Vayakhel and the portion of Pekudei, they got stuck together. And it's in the names of each of the two portions, which has an indication as to the content. The word Vayakhel means he gathered. Moses gathered together all the Jewish people, and he told them about the Sabbath, and he told them about the building of the sanctuary. The point of the portion, since that's what its name is Vayakhel, this gathering together. When you have something called a kehillah, a congregation, congregations are made of individual entities. But when using the word congregation, you say a congregation is. It's singular. It's a collective noun, as we might say, yes, because it involves lots and lots and lots of entities within this singularity. But the main point is the singularity. They're all there in a common way, in a common goal, common theme. Pekudei, the word Pekudei means to count or give an account, make an assessment, as Moses did at the beginning of the portion, because Moses had been accused of taking off the top, a little embezzlement going on over there. And he showed his accounts receivable, accounts payable, and the whole business for column bookkeeping. He did it and came up 0-0 at the bottom. As much came in as much went out. And to prove that he was, well, Moses, indeed. The point being, though, is when a person takes an account, when Moses was concerned because in this project, which in today's standards would be somewhere between $60-70 million in the making, he was missing 17 ounces of silver, which today would be sort of like not a whole lot when you're talking that kind of deal. But he was worried. It's like when you're balancing your checkbook and you're off by 2 cents. It's like, oh, man. Especially now that you do it by computer, it won't let you zero it out like you used to do in your head. That's only 2 cents. No, you have to go back and find the 2 cents. And Moses really did that, but he needed the help of the Almighty, because the Almighty had to remind him that they had 3,500 half-ounce silver hooks that he forgot about. It'd be kind of like forgetting, if you're building a skyscraper, forgetting about some of the nails. We have $5,000. I don't know where it went to. Okay, when $5,000 went into nails. So when we're making an account, we must be very exact. So here it is now. We have the two portions together. And what's now the conjoined theme is that we have our singularity. We're focused on serving the Almighty. The portion starts with Shabbos, the making of the sanctuary. We're making an account and seeing in ourselves
exactly right down to the penny. Now comes Passover. And this is an initial step in Passover, since this is the first week after Purim, when we're in the 30 days of preparing. It's actually the second week. Yesterday was the first week. Sorry. But we're well into it then. And what are we doing? What's Passover all about? Passover is about relating to God in a way that, you should pardon the expression, passes over nature. The Exodus of Egypt totally and completely blew away the laws of nature. You had in the population of Jews, say 5, 6, 7 million people, with all their stuff, probably hundreds of million of sheep that they all carried out, they all took out with them, left Egypt in the blink of an eye, 120 kilometers. What was passed over in Passover was time and space. God kind of just like folded it all up, and they were able to travel in the blink of an eye, which really is no time, a distance which was no distance at that time, because you really can't travel anywhere in the blink of an eye, but they traveled that 120 kilometers. What happened with Passover that it's lauded as the earmark, the benchmark for Judaism? There are so many commandments that we do because we left Egypt. Of course, we celebrate Passover and eat matzah and recount the story. But we also put on tefillin in the morning, part of the prayers, the saying of the Shema, the wearing of the tzitzis, the keeping of the Sabbath, the making of the kiddush on the Sabbath on Friday night, as it says, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, as a remembrance that we left Egypt. There's probably close to 20 mitzvahs that we do because we left Egypt. But more important than that, and why is that, is because Passover marks the birth of the Jewish people. Before that, the Jewish people, there was no Jewish people. There was a large family of a bunch of seventh cousins is what there was. With this process of being whisked away from Egypt, they were solidified into the Jewish people. So now we see that a direct connection, the process between Vayakel Pekudei, when we're achieving a singularity and we're exact right down to the slightest penny. And who are we making this singularity with? What entity? We're making it with the Almighty. Passover is about becoming connected to God in a perfect state. It says when the Jews left Egypt, they were considered totally righteous. It wasn't, and they maintained that until after the golden calf, in which case they became penitents, but that's for another time. So every year that we're celebrating Passover, the holiday is not just a commemoration, but it's like reliving it. And what's happening on the first night of Passover this year, 5777, in 2017, is exactly the same thing that happened in the year 2448. There's this tremendous godly revelation, and the Almighty is wanting to be connected to the Jewish people. In order to be connected to the Jewish people have to be wanting to be connected to the Almighty. That's what Vayakel Pekudei is. Getting it together right down to the slightest detail. Speaking of details, we've got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. We've got the Hasidic story coming up. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Shul Finneman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? 21 years we've been saying it. www.rabbifinman.com. That's the way. Right there on the homepage, just contact us. You contact me. You have a question, a comment, criticism, just feel like spouting. That's also all good. It's all fine. I spend much of Sunday afternoon looking over the email, because most people, when they write, it's like they heard something right now, and if they're near a computer, they're going to do it right away. I'm the same way. And if they're not near the computer, they forget about it. They don't get to it, and, you know, that's that. You go to the computer, you go to rabbifinman.com, you contact me, and yeah, I contact you back. I always answer every letter. Personally, I don't have a secretary doing that. I would think that would be offensive. And you don't get one of those automatic responses, your email has been looked at, you know. No, personal. What else is on rabbifinman.com? Archived editions of the show going back more than a year. It's all up there. You also have archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which yours truly conveys the messages of Judaism in an entertaining and educational manner. And, of course, the very important donations page. People came through this month. We were behind 3 months at the beginning of the month. And we're at the 19th? Yes. We're just past the halfway mark. We paid off 2 months. January, February, history. Nobody cares about them anymore. And guess what? We've got 2 weeks or so to pay off for March. And if it comes in that March gets paid off this week, for example, I won't be making a pledge drive for March. Of course, March is our anniversary month, and it is membership time. So you could become a member of the Jewish Hour by donating $36 or more to the Jewish Hour. You go to rabbifinman.com, donations page, and we'll send you a CD from the Jewish Hour, Jewish Music Archive. And you can stipulate what genre of music you like listening to. We still have an eclectic assortment of Jewish music available. Don't like internet giving? Understood. Just drop your donation in the mail to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Again, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, the home of Jewish Ferndale. Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. And you'll want to go also to maybe the Jewish Ferndale, www.jewishferndale, see what's new and happening and the exciting adventures of Jewish Ferndale. Story takes place over a period of about 30 years. There was a young woman who suffered terrible headaches. And this family were adherents to Chabad Hasidus and followers of the then Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was known as the Tzemach Tzedek. So the husband, the next time he was in Lubavitch, received a private audience and told the Rebbe about his wife's headaches. These are constant, terrible headaches. So the Rebbe gave him advice that she should, whenever she gets at the beginning of whenever she gets a headache, she should wash her face with very hot water, as hot as she could possibly stand. Okay? Not without burning herself, of course. And this worked. And it worked for many, many years until the passing of the Tzemach Tzedek in 1864. After his passing, suddenly the headache started coming back. And so on his next trip, this young man, who is now a middle-aged man, went to the successor of the Rebbe Maharash and told him in a private audience that many years previous, he had asked the father of the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, now, about the headaches, and he suggested that his wife washed in very hot water, and the very hot water is no longer working. So the Rebbe Maharash suggested Well, if hot water isn't working anymore, as soon as she gets a headache, she should wash her face in very cold water. And it worked. And it worked until 1873, when the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe passed away and was succeeded by his son, the Rebbe Rashab. And now the headaches are back. So he went again now as an older person and told the new Rebbe, the fifth Rebbe, about what the third Rebbe had said about his wife's headache, that she should wash her face in very hot water. And then what the fourth Rebbe, the Rebbe Marash, suggested, the Rebbe's father, that she wash her face in very cold water. And now hot water and cold water are not working. So the Rebbe responded, if hot water and cold water are not working, she should try washing her face in warm water. Mix the two together. And indeed, this actually worked. What's the whole purpose behind this story is we see the hot water, the cold water, the warm water probably really didn't have anything to do with the headache. But being connected to a Rebbe, being connected to a leader such as this, has its benefits, you might say, because the Rebbe says, listen, you know what? It's my problem. I'll take on the problem, and I'll help you do it. I'll take care of it. You just got to do something. And so each one had their own method, and each Rebbe had his own style. And so that's the way the adherents did it. That's going to do it for the show. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week.